Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name is Cosmo, and tonight I'm joined by Eddie.
Good evening.
Very swaggy looking Eddie, I must say. Me and Jed were very complimentary as soon as he joined the Zoom.
Thank you guys.
And the other name I mentioned, it's a pleasure to have him back for the new season. We got Jed.
What are you saying, boys? You all right? Feeling nervous, I can't lie.
Really? Yeah, I can't lie. Last week, I did feel a little bit of like pod nerves. Just like rustiness.
That's exactly what I'm feeling now, man.
Well, at least nobody left the meeting as soon as it started, like Glenn.
Yeah, that's true. He was fumbling around. But, I mean, what better way to come back onto the pod, Jed, than after that result? I think one of the things that impressed me most about that game was the fact that it really felt like a statement victory, in the sense that I watched Erik ten Hag's United last week, and it was interesting, Eddie, because you said, because we recorded on a Monday evening, you were like, you can't really predict how this next game's going to go until we see them play. And honestly, I think like 30 seconds into the game, I was like, these guys actually look pretty shit, in the sense that I think having Ange as our manager has kind of forced even the most reluctant of us to become tacticos. And we're all kind of, we've become well-versed with like inverted fullbacks. And I'm not so well-versed with how to actually say the formation when it's in the attacking build-up, 3-2-5 or whatever. I don't know, 2-3-5, something like that. I don't even know if that's adding up to 10, but you know, you get my drift. But they just looked so ordinary. They reminded me of how we kind of looked under Conte, under Nuno, under Mourinho, in the sense that like they weren't proactive. They were very reactive. And after that, I was like, okay, we can actually do something against them. And this is a long-winded way of saying, I was so impressed by the fact that we could win by playing Ange's philosophy against a team where they've got one of supposedly the most exciting young managers in the world, in Erik ten Hag. He's had that squad for a year, and we played our philosophy after Ange in Ange's second competitive game. I just thought, what better way to make a statement, not only for Ange, but for the new post-Kane era. Eddie, what did you make of the game and how we played in that sense?
I think that it's such a pleasure to to record this after the game, and we have a positive result, because me and Glenn actually spoke about this on the pod and also in the chat. Our first two games, Brentford and Man United, are two games that, whilst not like maybe a City or an Arsenal or even a Liverpool, those are two games that will really challenge how well this team's adjusted to the new formation, because both those teams are so effective on the break, and they have either wingers or wingbacks that are apps. They raid down both their sides. With that said, I think we proved that we have the bravery to play our football no matter the opposition. And I think that even though there was a genuine threat in behind with that front three of Rashford, Garnacho and Antony, all three of whom have pace for days. They're bags of pace. And if utilised properly, could expose our formation, especially if we lose the ball in the early phases of play. I thought that we did so well to initially hang in a little bit in that first half, because they did have chances. And I don't want to cover this game and say that United didn't have chances to maybe go ahead, maybe even score two goals. But with that said, I think we did so well to hang on. And then when talking about the second half, I thought we were brilliant. And I think that's much more down to our dominant style of play than how poor United were. Because I think you can say United were poor, yes, And I think that if it was a case of United being poor and us taking advantage of that, then what you would have seen is United trying to continue to play the way that they want to play with those two midfielders in Mount and Fernandes, because they're meant to be pivotal to that team. But what you saw is we dominated that midfield box so much with our inverted fullbacks and with the eights, that they were just forced to go long to Rashford, who doesn't like going down the middle. They had to change their wingers. They even tried to bring on Martial. They were bypassing a midfield that was being absolutely overrun. And that's because we were being tactically astute. And I think everyone in that midfield, whether they did a flashy job or an unflashy job or was sung about till the cows come home or not, I think everyone performed their role exactly how Ange would have wanted them to. Even the players that came in, like Sarr and Porro. Porro especially, with question marks on whether that was even worth doing in a game like against Man United. And I think we're proving that we have the bravery to continue to play the way we want to, even if in the last 10 minutes we were a bit kind of, we were trying to hold on to that win. But yeah, I think it was really positive, and I'm sure we'll break down the game even further.
Yeah, Jed, like Eddie said, they did have chances in the first half, and they were high quality chances as well. But I came out of that first half, and I know we did have a strong late flurry, and I was like, I was watching it at my girlfriend's. My girlfriend has no interest in football. Like, I went up, and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm watching Spurs play like some exciting football game. Like, she literally didn't even think I was a football fan because we started dating at the end of the Antonio Conte era. I was just not watching games. Like, she wasn't prepared for me to actually like be watching games now. But I went up and I was like, I was buzzing. I was like, yeah, no, we're playing really good stuff. Yeah, I think there's like a chance we're going to win. And then I go downstairs and you hear Roy Keane being like, Tottenham are there for the taking. And I was like, sorry, is this guy watching the same game as me? Like, I felt really positive. Especially with the fact that I know they had their chances, but I don't feel like their chances came from them having a system or them playing well. I think it's, not to say this in like too much of a negative way, but it was from a defect of our system in the sense that we're so attacking, quite often we're only going to leave like two people at the back. So you can exploit that, and we are going to give up chances. And Vicario is going to have a lot to do, and he did well. So, yeah, I'm supposed to be asking you a question there, Jed, and I've just rambled on. But did you feel like it was overstated when people were saying that United had the better of the first half?
I wouldn't say it was overstated. I think what you said is right. I think everything that United did wasn't necessarily because of their own doing. Like you said, it was because Porro got caught on the ball a lot. And don't get me wrong, and I know a lot was made of that and how Spurs are being arrogant in that approach. And I don't know if it's too early to go on that. So I know we did want to talk about the analysis of the game and stuff with Keane and Neville.
We'll talk about it a bit now.
I just think it's embarrassing, to be honest. The same Gary Neville who last year was saying that Spurs need to get back to their roots and start playing attacking and attractive football is now bashing us for trying to play that style of football in the second game of the season. With Porro, who's only just come into the side in our second competitive game, didn't play against Brentford. So it's expected that he's going to be rusty. We know that Porro's a risk taker as well. So none of us were under any illusions that he was going to be perfect. We knew that there was going to be times where he's going to lose the ball. So for them to claim that we were arrogant for trying to play our stuff, I just think it come across as really salty that how dare little old Spurs try and take the game to Man United. And if I saw a quote today from Gary Neville basically saying, what did it say? It was...
we took Pep Guardiola's philosophy and made it ineffective.
And the thing is, that's such bullshit because we've scored 4 goals in the league already. One which has come from Emerson on the edge of the box, which last season he would have never been in those sort of positions. And if he had watched the Brentford game, he would have seen that Emerson actually, in my opinion, I thought he played that role perfectly And I know you guys mentioned it on the pod that obviously Emerson does have his technical deficiencies, and I think that's actually why Porro came in for this. I know people suggested he might be in there for his recovery pace, but Emerson's not a slouch. I think Porro is in there because when you're inverting, you probably want a bit more technical security against Man United's midfield. So I think that's the reason he came in. And then secondly, our second goal against Man United literally came from Ben Davis underlapping into the box. So if basically two goals coming from our inverted fullbacks is ineffective, and I can't wait to see what it's like when it's effective. I think they're just salty, and it's embarrassing. It's actually embarrassing from them.
I think you're right when you say it's embarrassing, because I definitely think a part of it was kind of insecurity from Gary Neville, which is a weird thing for someone who had such a decorated career and generally is considered to be one of the best right backs of the Premier League era. But he kept banging on about it. He was like, oh, I hate seeing fullbacks receiving the ball in the half turn. Like, they're not centre midfielders. And I couldn't help but think, like, just because you couldn't do it, just because you didn't have the skill set to receive the ball on the half turn, doesn't mean that like someone like Porro doesn't have the skill set to do it. And it is something with commentary where I do feel like co-commentators sometimes just get something in their heads and they just keep saying it in the hope that it's actually going to come off. But I mean, evidently, like from what you said, Jed, both of our goals came from fullbacks.
Look at Udogie's performances in the first two games. Incredible. He's been one of our best players playing as an inverted wing back and driving forward. So I think you're completely right in what you say, Cosmo. He saw the first 25-30 minutes, saw that Porro got caught on the ball a couple times, and he just stuck on that. And the rest of the game did not reflect how hard he was going in that analysis, because there was points where the ball got played inside to Porro, and then he played that first time pass to Kulusevski up the wing. There was that chance where Porro arrived on the edge of the box and pretty much nearly scored. So it's dumb to take a 25-minute sample size out of two games of the season and say, yeah, Spurs are arrogant for persisting with this style of play. We're trying to implement it. There's going to be mistakes. I don't know what they expect us to do.
I mean, I think it also speaks to the fact that, unfortunately, and listen, not everyone can be chronically on the internet. I know that better than most. But unfortunately, it feels like analysis now, if it's not from people who actually dedicate time to studying football teams, is just their analysis is based on football that was played 20 years ago. Because I think apart from a few select commentators and pundits, they still think that football should be played with wingers and fullbacks and a number nine and a destroyer and a creator, like archetypes of football positions. And football is not that anymore. And I think that they're insecure about the evolution of football without them being in the game. Gary Neville couldn't make it as a manager, and that's simply because he didn't have the stones for it at the time that he was managing. And maybe he can learn, but he has to be open to learning. And I think that, yes, I think Pep played with inverted fullbacks, but what John Stones does and what Kyle Walker does, and even when Cancelo is doing it, is very different to what Udogie and Porro are doing. It's very, very different. We're not playing, first of all, we're not playing with four centre backs. That's one difference. The City's fullbacks that are inverting are centre backs who are technically good on the ball, but they're not nearly as dynamic as our fullbacks. That's one thing. And secondly, when they do invert, City are building with a two in midfield. They're not building with a six and then two inverted fullbacks. They're playing with a back three. One of those fullbacks make up the back three. It's not always two inverted fullbacks. So I think they think of the idea of an inverted fullback, think that Pep did it last season, and Pep was the first person to ever do it, without even looking at the fact that Ange has been doing this at Celtic. This is something that he's experimented with even before Celtic. And they think it's arrogant that Spurs are trying to play with inverted fullbacks, whereas it's arrogant to think that they know everything about football. And I think that what will happen this season is that people aren't prepared to not see dinosaur football from Tottenham after 4 years of it, after Tottenham being the poster boys for managers being past their time after Tottenham were poster boys for being negative, even though we have these so many great players. And now that Harry Kane's gone, people don't want us to succeed because then it looks bad on them.
Destroys their narrative, yeah.
Yeah, this team can't succeed without Harry Kane. And so once again, we're gonna be on the back of some, in my opinion, poor analysis. It wasn't just Sky Sports. In Match of the Day, there was not nearly enough time given to the fact that we played brilliantly. They talked about Sarr for about 2 minutes. And then they talked about Man United's deficiencies. And then Danny Murphy, who I usually try and mute every time he speaks, he says, yeah, Spurs played well. And that was about it. It's going to be frustrating because people then get maligned for being, oh, like tacticos, like, oh, people who are obsessed with football maybe understand this, but blah, 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 blah. My dad, who's not a tactico or anything like that, he just watched Tottenham and he thought that we looked really good. And he thought that we looked really aggressive and excited, entertaining. And he was like, this must be nice for you to watch after the last like 4 years. Like, he's like, I think for you, this must be enjoyable. And it's like, even if you didn't get the point, this must be better than what you've been watching for the last 4 years. I'm like, that's absolutely bang on.
How good is it to watch compared to what we've been watching? Like, it's so not ironic, but the fact that Conte used to say, oh, we need to suffer. He loved saying suffer. The last 4 years, we have completely suffered as Spurs fans. It's such a breath of fresh air to see us playing like this. Like, my mood has improved hugely from just watching Spurs, in the sense that we all support this club kind of in a way against our will. Like, we are culturally like Spurs fans. Like, we've been, for most of us, it's either through our like parents supporting Spurs or like our location. But there was a time when, well, the history of the club is to play exciting football, and we strayed so far from that. And it is beautiful to be able to be like excited about Spurs again. Because yeah, Lord knows, like, if you listen to some of our pods towards the tail end of last season, we were suffering. Like, it was hard to endure watching that. You were only watching it out of duty. No one would choose to watch that. No one in their right mind would choose to watch football like that.
We were podding when we basically podded in the Wilderman years. When you think about the fact that we had to pod when we played four fullbacks against Chelsea, like we were podcasting in that era of Tottenham where we played four fullbacks, some centre mid, and then Bergwijn and Kane. That's what we've had to watch. So for us to then go from that, and 3 years later or 4 years later, to watch a team that's, first of all, completely different to that team. I don't think there's any players in that team who started that game and is starting the game on the weekend. To go from that to that team. And also, the style of football is... Honestly, I promise you, I do not care if we don't finish in the top four this season. The joy that I'm getting from us trying to be a good football team is more than grinding out results and finishing in the top four for me this season. Obviously, we'll come to expect more when Ange hopefully gets more players for the profiles that he needs and when the formation starts to click. But listen, I think Spurs are heading in the right direction. And this will be a watermark for now. And then we've got a few games where we hopefully should win. And then we've got Arsenal, which would be another watermark. And I'm not saying that we're like, if we win the next three games, that we're guaranteed to beat Arsenal. But if that's the direction we're heading in, and even if we lose against Arsenal but play well, that's still a positive trajectory to me.
Do you think part of the reason why this new era feels so exciting is the fact that Harry Kane has left? It feels a bit ridiculous because he scored so many goals for us. And if you look back through the records, I was listening to Rule of Roost earlier, and they were saying that like in his like worst season, he still matched Defoe's best record of 17 goals, in the league. But was he a little bit of an albatross? Sort of like, was he a bit of a millstone around our neck in a weird sense? And I'm getting all my idioms mixed up here. But like, basically, did we have to sort of like get rid of him to kind of actually move on? Because I feel like part of why we had this desperation with Conte, with Mourinho, is because we had great players and we were so desperate to make it work that we would just play shit football that was all filtered through him and other players didn't step up. And now we have like a brand new team full of like 20-year-olds, 23-year-olds. Jed, do you think this kind of needed to happen?
Yeah, definitely. I think all throughout the summer, I think we've all kind of sort of, there's been points where we're like, yeah, it's probably for the best of the team if Kane goes. And then there's obviously that part of us where we're like, well, he is our best ever player. So it would be nice to still have him around. But financially, it made sense to sell him because obviously, whether you think the money's been spent or not is up to you. But either way, if it has, we've managed to bring in some quality young players that are going to help add something to the team. And just because for 3-4 years now, just that constant question of, is he going to leave? Fans almost taunting us saying, oh yeah, but Kane's going to leave. So what are you going to be after that? And for me, performances like the weekend are so important for maybe not Spurs fans, because I feel like Spurs fans have been generally quite positive about Ange and positive in the direction we're heading in. But even for the players, for them to put in a performance like that against a big team, against a rival team. And Ange always goes on about how the players don't quite trust the system yet, so they're getting these sort of things wrong, whether it's in pre-season, whether it's the Brentford game. And for them to put in that performance for, let's say, about 60 minutes of that game, I think the confidence that that's going to breed in the whole team, knowing that they can perform at that level without having to rely on Harry Kane, knowing that the system works against a big team, I think the confidence is going to give us going forward. I don't want to say we're not going to fear anyone, because there's definitely a long way to go and there's a lot of stuff to iron out. But yeah, I just think, like you said, Cosmo, everyone has a responsibility in the team now. It's not, I know we've been playing defensive football and it's easy to just say, give it to Kane and let him do his thing. But now people have to step up. You can't just turn to Harry Kane and think he'll get us out of it. People have to step up and be counted now. And I think that's so important for the team. And like I said, with that result on the weekend, I think it's going to breed so much confidence into him.
I was actually thinking that your point on Ange about like, or people's perspective of Spurs from like outside the Spurs fandom. I just think he's such a breath of fresh air, because I was watching Match of the Day before we jumped on, just kind of like jog my memory a little bit. And when it came to his interview, I was thinking, like, obviously we've familiarized ourselves with Ange now, but I was thinking other fans must be like, who the fuck is this guy? He's so different to any other manager in the Premier League. Like, I don't think he's the first Australian to manage in the Premier League. He's kind of come from nowhere, and it must be weird for people outside of Spurs to see this whole new, like, quite random team. I don't think a lot of them had even heard of Pat Matasar, never mind Destiny Adogi. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this big Australian bloke talking with authority and warmth in the post-match interview. And people must be like, what's going on over there? It's an exciting time.
They hate it. They hate that we've managed to get our hands on someone like that. And not only the fact that he's so charismatic and calm in interviews and bats away any dumb questions that gets given to him, the fact that he's playing really good football alongside that. And it's just, I said it on the group chat after we beat United. I don't want to hear no neutral fans say nothing about us, whether it's positive, whether it's negative, because everyone was so quick to run their mouths when we appointed Ange, saying, you've appointed a Celtic manager, this chubby Greek Australian guy who shouldn't be anywhere near the league. What are they doing? They're going to get relegated. I don't want to hear them backtrack now. You've said what you've had to say. You were lazy in what you were saying. You couldn't be bothered to do any any analysis or look up about Ange's history. Oh yeah, he's managed in Japan, he's managed in Scotland. So how's he gonna do it in England? It's lazy. And now I can already hear it. People are gonna start backtracking, but I don't wanna hear it. I don't wanna hear it. You said what you said. You were willing to be arrogant enough to not be open-minded about this sort of manager coming into the league. And now people are gonna start loving him.
It reminds me, actually, what you were saying, Jed, right at the start of Poch's era, where Eric Dyer, this is one of my favourite Spurs interviews ever, when he was like, I think a lot of people been chatting down on Spurs' name and we don't like it and we want to change that. And that was such a positive energy for Spurs. That's something Spurs need to channel. We need to channel that energy. Everyone hates Spurs for whatever reason. I still can't really work out why, when you've got teams like Chelsea spending £1 billion and somehow Spurs are more hated. But we lost that energy. That is something that you get from a brand new manager coming in and shaking things up. And by the end, and I think people like Kane were culpable in this, we absorbed the outside influences of being like, you have to win a trophy, you have to win a trophy this year, you have to win a trophy. And I think that that killed people like Kane, probably killed people like Lloris, Dyer as well. They all started to absorb that, I think. And this is a real opportunity to kind of build a positive version of like us against the world, not the Mourinho version, I think.
Well, I think that both having back-to-back, because we don't really count Nuno, having back-to-back eras of Mourinho and Conte, where it was built into the team that we had to suffer to get any kind of reward or result. And the fact that both those managers, Mourinho really less so than Conte, were fighting with the team. Like they were saying, I am a winner. You guys need to become winners. Like that was a narrative for both those managers, whereas like, I cannot not succeed because I've never not succeeded. And so you guys have to succeed through me, whether I'm doing enough to make that happen individually or not. Like, I really think that Conte especially was trying to mold a team that was never going to fit his style of football. And we nearly broke our team in trying to make it work for someone who was never committed to staying there. And in the end, actually, in my opinion, was in self-destruct by the end of his tenure, because there's no way you can look at the way that we played and the way that he spoke about the team and he said that he wasn't just in a self-destruct, I'm just going to clear my name so that I'm not associated with this anymore. And so I think that we spoke about this earlier, and Cosmo, you kind of posed like a real hypothetical, like, or could Ange even move on from Spurs into something even bigger? And I think compared to the other two managers, the two managers that we had previously, this feels like Ange is like, this is my big moment. This is where I can prove that I can manage at this level, that I can perform at this level, that I can implement my style at this level. Because the Super League wasn't formed, but the Premier League is that. You've got 10 teams now that are financially probably the 10 biggest teams in the world in terms of what they can, the players that they can attract and the fees that they can pay. Because I did not count Saudi as part of that, because that's something completely different. That is essentially sports washing. We won't get into it. The fact that the Premier League is now where the best football is played, where the best teams are, where the best players want to play. I personally think that now that you have your Villas, your Brightons, you have Tottenham, Newcastle, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, you have United, even United, you have all those teams now that can play a strong brand of football, and just come into Spurs, and this is where he puts his marker down and be like, I can compete with all of these teams. So I think that because Ange has come in with that energy, that energy will spread into the team. that the team can perform at this level, the team can challenge, that the manager can take them to further than they've been. On top of that, what we've been crying out for is a team that doesn't have the weight of all the disappointments that we've had, all the cups or the semi-finals or the finals that we've lost in. You look at that team now, there's none. Son is maybe the only person in that starting lineup that's had to play through all those disappointments. And so when you get rid of those players, or when you get rid of that, then that weight is pulled off their shoulders, is pulled off their chest, and they can play with more freedom because they've never had to suffer that kind of disappointment with that team. And I think that's also super important. That's why teams need to refresh often, because if you don't, then it gets ingrained with you. Like you said, Cosmo, like you buy into that narrative of, oh, this team are unsuccessful, this team haven't won trophies, these specific players, whilst good, haven't won trophies. That plays on your mind. And so that's why I think, like you said, Cosmo, at the beginning, has Harry Kane leaving been a positive on Spurs? I think that not just Harry Kane, Lloris and all of these other players, that whole team.
Dyer not making the squads as well.
Exactly. That whole team being refreshed, Højbjerg not starting games even, that whole team being refreshed allows us to have a new energy for this new season, which can only be positive in my opinion.
Let's talk about some of those new players coming in. Bissouma, essentially a new player because Conte, for whatever reason, didn't fancy him. Pat Matasar, what a performance, what a way to like really announce yourself. I know people were positive about him in the Milan away leg, but he showed something. Again, it's another case of I wasn't familiar with your game, because I thought Pap was kind of more someone who did what he did with the goal, someone that gets forward and kind of tries to burst into the box and get goals. But I think what was genuinely beautiful about his performance was that I think there was one moment, probably around 70 minutes, where he tracked back really far and just made a perfect tackle. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, don't slide in there. And it was just inch perfect. And like, he was incredible. Bissouma, his ball carrying was insane. And Maddison, again, really wasn't familiar with his game. Another amazing performance. Watching it back on Match of the Day, such a good ball carrier. So elegant, but still so explosive, so dynamic. That's something which I didn't see coming. I didn't think our midfield was going to be the strongest part of our game, but it is at the moment.
Yeah. I want to join you two. Well, I can't remember if you said it, Cosmo, but I feel like Eddie definitely said it last week in apologising on my take for James Maddison. He's like you guys mentioned last week, so I'm not going to go into it too much, but he's surprised me, man. Really surprised me, really impressed me. And I think he's really taken to this role of being one of our most important players and basically one of the leaders in the squad, which is obviously why he got given the vice captaincy. But you can see when he's playing on the pitch, the way he demands the ball, the confidence and the assertiveness that he has when he has the ball. I didn't know he had that. I knew he had all the free kicks. He could do the long shots. He could play a pass, but the way he's really looking to take the game by the scruff of the neck, drop deep and try and progress the ball, it's a dream to have that midfield. And for me now, I know Bentancur's apparently going to be back mid-September, but I feel like we don't even need to rush him back now. We can sort of, I really like the blend between that midfield three of Bissouma, Saar and Maddison, because I think what Saar gives us on that other side where one of the fullbacks invert is that the way he runs, the long strides, the speed to get back and recover is so important, because we, like we saw against Brentford, we're going to get caught out a lot of times on those wings. So for him to be in those positions and be able to cover that ground, I think it's super important. And then obviously on the other side, you've got Udogie as well. I know we mentioned him last week, but we haven't really mentioned him today. He's just a monster on that left-hand side. He covers that whole area. And then you've got Bissouma as well. It's like in transition, I can't really see us. I know we're going to be susceptible to long balls, but if the ball gets turned over in midfield, I can't see us losing many battles because we've got such strength and such power in the midfield and so much aggressiveness that I think that midfield three for now is perfect until Bentancur gets up and running again.
I think it's the control, like we talk about the aggressiveness. I think it's the controlled aggression of all our players.
Yeah.
Like knowing when to maybe aside from Romero every now and then, but knowing when to go in, when to use your body, how to use your body. I think it's impressive that aside from like maybe dissent, we haven't been actually fouling that much either or giving away too many yellow cards, which I think is, considering how aggressive we are in our style of football, I think it's very impressive. Like I thought that we were going to be susceptible to getting more yellow cards this season just because of the way they've been officiating. But I think that the timing of the tackles and the aggression has been super impressive from a young team. If you look at the team, Son's 31, but then the rest of the team, the oldest player is 26. Mm. And when you look at it in that sense, it's really, really interesting to see. And I kind of want to talk about individuals like after the break so I don't get cut off. But I agree with those players that you picked out. I thought they were all very, very impressive. But I do want to talk about Bissouma specifically again.
Yeah, like you say, let's go to a quick break and we'll be back for part two. All right, welcome back to part two. Eddie, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about Yves Bissouma.
Yeah.
Floor is yours to wax lyrical about him.
I think that we talked about Bissouma last week, obviously, and how impressive he was in his like press resistance, especially because Brentford do like to press, especially in like that front third. So he was under a lot of pressure in that Brentford game and didn't give much away. I don't think United pressed as much, but we saw a different side to Bissouma, like an added element to Bissouma's game, which that I think he was able to carry the ball a lot more in this game than he was against Brentford. And we were, the reason why United found it so difficult to play through that midfield was that combination of Bissouma, Udogie, and a mixture of Porro and Sarr, just breaking up so much of that midfield play to the point where obviously Fernandes, who's obviously reputation precedes him, just moaning nonstop at his team and being able to bypass a midfield which on paper has a lot of like technical ability. And then you have the destroyer element in Casemiro, but he's also good on the ball. I thought that Bissouma was so key to that because when we were having some issues with playing into the inverted fullbacks, more Porro, Bissouma took more responsibility in like demanding the ball off the centre backs with his back to play. And I thought what we did really well, or what Bissouma was doing particularly well, was that the way that he was opening his body up to receive the ball meant that he could turn and transition into the midfield. And he was doing that constantly. It wasn't just once or twice. He was either like Cruyff turning out of a two-man press or receiving the ball and almost already on the swivel once the ball was getting to his feet. And I thought in this game, even more than the Brentford game, there was a lot more synergy with Maddison and Sarr than we saw in the first game. And even getting further up the pitch, we saw the back heel nutmeg on Casemiro. It feels like it feels ridiculous to say, but like he's even like grown even more and more into that like role. With each passing game, and that's like super exciting for me because I think there's still even like elements where he gets into the final third where he kind of delays, whether it's a shot or a pass, but the fact that he's even in those positions and we're still so secure on the ball is really, really positive. And that's going to be a combination of like understanding the limitations of the team and also understanding the strengths of the team. Like I definitely think that adding Sarr to that and having the security of Udogie like he's not, it gives him, the handbrake is off for him because he can afford to progress with the ball. He can afford to get into the opposition half, carry the ball, and know that we have enough recovery pace in there and enough physicality to if we lose the ball, to get back quick. And I just think that he is so key to the way we play at the moment. And we were talking about it last week. We have to be really super careful with his fitness because he's never really had like a full season fully fit. There have been times where in every season he's really played at this level where he's had injury issues. So we have to be careful of that. Obviously, the schedule is less cluttered for us because we're not in Europe. But we do have, like, we have to be able to rest him in cup games, and like, especially since he's also going to AFCON as well. Like, we're going to need to manage his fitness, and also we have to potentially even try other players in that position, so that we're not just like completely hamstrung, because he's essential to the way both the way we build up. And the way that we defensively we were structured, because if you look at the formation, we're going to go into this kind of briefly now. If you look at the formation with the centre backs and the full backs, you have that box, and then with the full backs and the eights, you have that box as well. And between those two boxes, the defensive box and the midfield box, Bissouma is like transitioning between both those boxes. He's like the anchor between both of them, and it's essential for him to feel comfortable in those positions. And I think he's been doing it brilliantly. I guess we'll see, like, against a Liverpool or an Arsenal or a City, like, whether like that is something that we can do in every game. But so far, I think he's been brilliant. Like, really one of the stars in that team so far.
I think it is quite like a Spurs narrative, in the sense that, like Eddie, you say, oh, we got to see how he does against like Liverpool or City or Arsenal, because United is on paper is a tough game. And I feel like the way the media portrays things is if Spurs beat United, then it must be because United are terrible. But he has done it against, you know, quote unquote, like decent team. I know they were not very good. They were quite unimpressive. But I do find it quite interesting how that narrative runs, that like as soon as we beat United, all of a sudden, oh, we've just beaten like a bad team. But
yeah. I think more those teams, I've listed those teams because those teams are like relentless pressers.
Yeah.
And like, especially like City and Liverpool, like the organisation of that press is like very impressive, especially about City, like, they'll like coax you into like positions that you don't want to be in. And I think like that's going to be like a true test of how brave we are on the ball. Because I think like with the press that City employ, like we could easily hurt them. We can, but it's about being able to like actually, like Bissouma, it will be a key figure in games like that. And yeah. The same with Liverpool as well.
I do think what was quite interesting as well is the fact that we do still pack a decent punch on the counter. A few of our chances, particularly early on, were balls into Son, normally by Bissouma. And that's one thing that I've got to say, because I think we were all, as a pod, particularly us three, we were quite down on seeing Son out on that left wing. But I think we're starting to see some real green shoots, especially like when I watched the highlights back. Son was involved in basically every attack. I thought he was very good. We saw some green shoots from Kulusevski. Obviously, it wasn't a clean assist, took a massive deflection, but he improved. I suppose the only downside was Richarlison. I think we're just going to kind of have to give him some time, I guess.
Go on, Jed.
No, yeah, I think this is one of the points Glenn wanted us to mention on his behalf, because he's going to be here today, that I think it is too soon to start writing Richarlison off so far. I think what he does give us is the fact that he's a handful for centre-backs at the very least. And you can only hope that with them occupied, it leaves space for Maddison. And like you say, if we are going to get pressed and a team is going to be very high up against us. We do, like you said, we do have that quality on the counter. I know I say very down is a bit of an understatement on Kulusevski at the minute, but I think one of his strongest qualities is his ability to carry into space. And I think if he is going to have a lot of space in behind the defence, he's going to be handy for us there. And as well, I know Vicario isn't exactly like someone like Onana, where we saw Onana's long passing and how effective that can be. But even having Son running into space as well, although he's being stuck out on the left-hand side, if we're going to get pressed high, which to be honest, I'm expecting to happen against Bournemouth because they're starting to press high now. That gives Son space to run into as well. So I completely agree. I think there's so many different ways we can hurt teams now. And just to go back to Bissouma as well for a second, what really impresses me with him is how eager he is to take the ball under pressure. Mm-hmm. You see when the defenders split and the gap comes in the middle, he is sprinting and shouting to receive that ball. And when he goes off to AFCON, and like Eddie said, we need to manage his minutes too, I'm quite worried about how we replicate that. Because really, like for that replacement at the moment is Højbjerg. And even at the best of times under Conte, he's shying away from the ball in those positions. And like you say, Eddie, the reason we play how we do is because Bissouma allows us to do that. We know he's so comfortable receiving, even receiving the ball in our own box under pressure. So I know people have mentioned Bentancur as a six, and I know he is comfortable receiving the ball under pressure too, but I think he's a little bit more risky than Bissouma. I think it's all about, he likes to draw players in by taking that extra touch and literally leaving it to the last minute to beat him. Whereas Bissouma can literally just turn instantly and use his strength and his power to get past someone. So yeah, I think you're definitely right in that sense, where we need to have a solid backup for him, because I don't think he's going to be available for 38 games this season.
Yep, and losing Saar to AFCON as well. So it's going to hit our midfield quite hard this season. And yeah, there is the elephant in the room of Maddison's injury. He's going for a scan today. I've got to say that, you know, I'm no doctor or anything, but that spooks me quite a lot, because I think that you're not going to leave the game in a boot and go for a scan if it's not potentially a problem. Hopefully this is all precautionary, but we could be without him for a little bit. Hopefully Lo Celso could fill in some way, but stylistically it's a big difference between him and Maddison.
I'm at least confident with Lo Celso coming in now, especially more so than I would have been last year or 2 years ago. I think we saw him pre-season, and I know pre-season is obviously only pre-season, you can't really take much from it, but I do think he looks like he suits this system really well. And I think he does have qualities that Maddison has, in terms of he's another one who can come deep to receive, another very good ball carrier. And I think he linked up really well on the left-hand side in pre-season. He seems to have a good understanding with his teammates. So although, don't get me wrong, it would be quite a massive blow if Maddison were to be out now, because obviously it's so Spurs to finally get that sort of player in and then he's injured. But I'm not as down as I would be knowing that we have Lo Celso to come back.
Yeah, and I've got to say as well, I think the squad depth is unexpectedly looking a lot better than it was. And I think that's all down to Ange. I don't think we're not bringing in like how City a few years ago could bring in like Sané, Bernardo Silva, whoever else with this like stacked squad. But people like Perisic and Solomon are looking really, really good when they come on.
Yeah.
Watching the highlights back, that assist Perisic got for the own goal, it's an incredible ball. It's a great piece of technical ability. And I think one of the things I said in the chat to you guys was the fact that the team that ended that match was like the stereotypical team that goes out to Morecambe in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And it looked really dynamic and good. So I think that bodes well.
I think that some of the big surprises in the game were like positive ones. And like the surprises were that maybe we're kind of underestimating what this team can do this season, because we've already like kind of written it off as a transition season. But if this team really does take to water, like all the signs are there. And even like a player that we haven't mentioned, Vicario, was really, really good on the weekend. I think we managed to sustain a lot of pressure at points in the game because he was so switched on. Made a couple very, very decent saves. Some you'd hope he'd make, and some look more spectacular than they actually were. But some of them were really, really intelligent, smart saves. Early on, that save against Rashford, deceptively good, because you have to have a strong wrist there. Something that Lloris in the past maybe would let in, especially like last season we saw. In those positions, it's almost like a write-off, like it's 1-0. So I think it's like been, I think it's, he was really good. And again, another player that I was surprised at the amount of pressure he was willing to take, in terms of he didn't rush and he didn't just hoof the ball either. He was always looking to pass to either a fullback or to one of the centre-backs or Bissouma. Like, it was never I cannot really remember more than two times where he just hoofed it forward, even when he was under immense pressure. Like, Rashford can eat up that grass really quickly. And I thought that Vicario was showed signs of why, like, we wanted him in the team. Obviously, like you said, he's not an Onana, he's not an Edison, he's not an Alisson. But I think that, yeah, it was the signs were really positive. And the more I'm under the impression now that the more confidence he gets, like, the more performances we're going to see like that. So I think what we saw was that he was hesitant and a bit kind of worried to maybe, like, in those early stages. But I think if he's able to get that confidence, then I think it will be positive for us. Because he can pass. He actually can pass. But there were none of the hospital balls that we saw so many seasons.
Yeah, he really needed a performance like that. I feel like that would have done wonders for his confidence. Because I feel like now, as fans, we've seen why fans of the Serie A were talking about him in the way that they did. Because he was kind of forced, again, by the nature of how we play, to make some really important saves. And at Empoli, he would have faced a lot of those kind of shots, and I can see why they were saying he was one of the best keepers in the league now. And I think that's gonna help him, but also the energy of the stadium. I don't think people are going to get so scared when the ball goes to him now. So I hope he can build on that. I hope there's not going to be some like clangor against Bournemouth.
I think like with Vicario, I think there will be clangors, and that's not me saying that he's a bad keeper. I just think it's the nature of how he plays. And I know, don't get me wrong, I was saying last week that he scares the shit out of me pretty much like every other Spurs fan. But I think we need to understand that in world football, there's not really many elite keepers now who are going to give you that ball playing ability and shot stopping ability. I kind of compare him to like a young Pickford or a Ramsdale now, where I see Ramsdale and a young Pickford. They like to get involved with battles with the opposition fans quite a lot. And not that we've seen that from Vicario. It seems like Vicario's in a battle with himself almost sometimes. And he does stupid stuff. And he's an excellent shot stopper, but I just think that nature of his character, I just think sometimes you are just going to see those sort of clangers from him. Doesn't mean he's a bad keeper. I just think that there's so many keepers like that now that they've got quite big personalities. And I think sometimes they maybe take that too far and maybe take their eye off the ball a little bit. But he's a really good shot stopper. His reflexes and reactions are brilliant. I just think sometimes he needs to calm down a little bit. Because like we saw against Brentford, he obviously could have given away a penalty in the last minute. A couple of times where he's slow playing out. But like you said, I think in a performance like that on Saturday is really important for him.
How are we feeling going up against Bournemouth? Obviously, away from home, it's going to be interesting in the sense that we have played a low block team in Brentford and probably a mid block team in Man United. This is going to be the first time that we're going to play a team that presses us back. I think it's like the nature of a Spurs fan. Like after a good result, you kind of like, next game, I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know if we're going to get 3 points. And I do feel like in the Premier League, like, I know it's a cliche, but there are literally no easy games now. And I think with a manager like Iraola, he's going to have some interesting ideas. And it's going to be intriguing to see how that goes.
Yeah, most importantly, it's a 12:30 on TNT away from home.
Nah, don't even think. Yeah,
you know how
script writers doing their thing.
When have you ever watched an away team turn up at 12:30 against a small team and beat them?
Mate, the amount of times I've seen like a Liverpool or a City struggle in those fixtures at 12:30 is mad.
Never bet the 12:30.
No one ever scored. None of the big teams ever score first.
It's so true.
Even if they do get a good result in the end, they never score first. But I think that potentially what we might see is that I think our fullbacks are not going to invert as narrow against Bournemouth. Just because they will press us a bit higher, I think we might just be a little bit wider with the fullbacks. Not obviously playing like a flat back four, but I think at times when we wanted to kind of relieve a bit of pressure, we were finding that like Son was coming behind the halfway line, and so was Kulusevski, and it's difficult to get up the pitch when your wingers do that. And maybe if the fullbacks can like come out of the midfield a bit and the eights drop a little bit, just so that we can essentially play from the same kind of build up, but instead of playing it out wide to like a winger, the Basuma, whoever plays in the six, can play it out to a fullback and we can ping it into an eight, and then our wingers can make an outside to inside run. I think that's going to help a lot with maybe relieving the pressure a bit. Obviously, I'm not Ange. Like, we might decide to do something completely different. And that's why he's getting paid to be a manager and I'm paying to be a fan. But I think that, like, we will see variations on the formula. And I think Bournemouth would be a good opportunity to maybe see, like, how we would perform in that way. Because, obviously, if it's going to be Porro again who starts, Bournemouth would be looking at what United were able to do early on in that game, impressing him and turning over the ball. So we have to be a bit more intelligent to that, and making sure that there's like someone like Bissouma has options as soon as he gets the ball.
Yeah. Some of my cousins are Cherries fans, and I think one of the interesting things with how they've started under Iraola is they do have a lot of attacking talent, which he hasn't really used. He's kind of, even though he has a reputation for being quite a attacking front foot manager, one that presses quite a lot, he has opted to give like an equivalent to Spurs. He's kind of not done what Ange has done in terms of like throwing in Porro and Sarr. He's gone the more conservative route and he's playing the equivalent of like Emerson and Skip, and potentially someone more defensive than Maddison as well. Just wondering how you guys think that might affect us, the fact that we're going to play quite an aggressive pressing team, but one that is not really looking to get that many attackers on the pitch.
I don't know. We're yet to really come up against a team who, I know Brentford pressed us quite hard, so it's a bit of an unknown quantity of how we're going to deal with that. I think Van de Ven looks super composed on the ball. But is he going to be able to do the same when he's got two players coming at him? I'm not too sure. But like I said earlier, it might be, I say it might be a game where we go direct. It's not going to be that because Ange isn't going to compromise on his style. So I think it might have to be what Eddie said. We might have to sort of adapt our style to maybe not invert the fullbacks as much, maybe keep them a bit wider to use them as options. But yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't really watched much of Bournemouth yet, so I can't say how we're really going to fare against it. It's still a bit of an unknown. It's only the third game of the season.
Mm.
So I think, I don't know. I don't really know, to be honest. It's a difficult one.
I thought that even against Liverpool, despite like the positive signs early on, they were just like Liverpool were able to get through that press pretty easily. Obviously they have like bags of quality, but they don't really have like a functioning midfield at the moment, and they were still able to do that. So I think there are like chances to be had there. And I don't think it's just definitely not the Bournemouth that we played like last season when we had to put like where we played 3-3. It's not going to be that kind of game. So I, again, like, I'm with Jed in the sense that it's very difficult to say, and I don't really know too much about Bournemouth this season. But from what I've seen, like, they are a side that still is getting to grips with the, a more aggressive style of play, despite, like, from being quite a low block and, like, relying on Billing and Solanke to do a lot of the work up top. So I think that will be a good battle, actually, for our centre-backs. Solanke is really good at using his body and you know, isn't a slouch. So I think that Romero and VDV have to be switched on. But it should be interesting. I'm not confident, actually, about the game. I think that it's just... one thing is, I'm just really excited to watch Ange every week. I'm really excited to watch Spurs every week now.
At the risk of massively hexing us and putting the curse on us, we do have three quite... comparably to what we've had in the opening two, we have three quite winnable games coming up. And I did raise the hypothetical to you guys earlier in the chat, which led to me saying, like, oh, you know, imagine Ange does amazing things, like, would someone like Real Madrid come in for him? If we were to get really positive results in these next three, how do you think Spurs are going to be talked about by the media? Because we are a bit of an unknown quantity. But say from our opening five games, we're far up the table, let's just say. What do you think? How do you think the media will talk about us? And how do you think potentially expectations in the fan base might change a little bit from being, oh, I'll just accept us coming like seventh if we play good football, to then all of a sudden there might be a bit like whispers of, I don't know, we could do something here. What do you guys think? You're free to say, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to curse it, by the way.
I think like the point's already been mentioned on the pod. I think a lot of judgment around Spurs will be reserved until that Arsenal game.
Yeah.
And I think just the way that general football discourse is now is that, like, we could go and win three games against these in these next three fixtures, sorry. And then we could go and get pumped by Arsenal. And just because of the reactive nature of analysis and social media now, after those three games, they'll be talking about us as title contenders. And then if we lose heavily to Arsenal, it will be the same old sort of lazy commentary surrounding Spurs. So I think that we've just said the whole pod, it's still way too early. I think in general, you can't really judge teams until sort of October, November time. So I think, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say to Spurs fans, don't get carried away. We're all just happy and excited to see us play every week now. So if we win the next three, that's great, obviously. And it's good to get points on the board early. And actually, I said it to you guys on the chat, I actually think these next three games are probably a better indication for me of what Spurs are going to be. Because I've gone into these sort of fixtures in the last 3 years thinking, this is definitely a banana skin. And almost certainly thinking from three games against, let's be real, bottom half teams, I would be going into that saying we're probably going to get about 4 or 5 points just because I know Spurs have that bozo gene. So I've always said that home games against big teams like United, Chelsea, Liverpool, we always get up for them. And don't get me wrong, the performance has been much better than any of those in the last 3 years than it was against United. So listen, I think it's going to be a test to see where we are mentally against these teams. I don't expect us to be that same team that go into those games just expecting to beat them, because Ange is obviously changing that mentality and doesn't want us to be complacent. But I am interested to see how we're going to approach it, and how we're going to go for it.
Eddie, any thoughts before we lock things off here?
No, not really. I just, like I said, I'm really what I've seen, not just in the first two games, but over pre-season, and just the way that Ange has spoken about it and the way that players have spoken about it, we have a reason to want to tune into Spurs every week. Like, we have a reason because the team are determined to play attractive and dynamic football, not just winning football. And I think that's been the difference between the last, between now and the last three managers that we've had, is that it was a win at all costs type situation with those managers. And now it's not that. It's about making sure that the attitude is right, the play is right, and we're playing a brand of football that is sustainable. Because the issue that we've had isn't that Conte couldn't have won with Spurs or Mourinho couldn't have won with Spurs. It's that the football that they play is unsustainable with the players that we had. And it will never work. Like, it's Pep can't play Pep ball with Sheffield. Do you know what I mean? Pep's not going to be able to play that kind of football with Leicester last season, because he doesn't have the players for it. So you have to play the football that your team can actually play. So we have reasons to be excited about Spurs this season, and Bournemouth on the weekend, despite the timing of it, is another game to be excited about, just like United was and just like Brentford was.
Just quickly, just before we end, why do you think those 12-30 games are so kind of spooky for big teams? Is it to do with the fact that like the players are waking up too early, or what? What is it?
That's like Ty's comment. We mustn't forget it's been raining.
It's a mentality.
Both teams are waking up early.
I think it's a mentality thing. It's just like you're away. I don't even know how it happens. I don't even know how it happens when we go to away games in London. It still feels the same.
Yeah, exactly.
It does. Fulham at 12:30 away. It's the same thing, man.
Yeah, it's just a spooky like timetable. I don't know. I actually think it's because if we don't get a positive result on the weekend, like it's the first, like you're stewing in that for the whole weekend. You have to watch the rest of the day worth of football. The next day, the day after, must be something.
But do you think the players think about that though? Why are they not turning up?
I don't know. Maybe it must be there was also the pressure of like fans traveling to the games as well, because they've had to get up early. Well, I mean, way earlier than the players. They could be traveling 3-4 hours to get to the game. So there might be the pressure of that as well.
And it's also like because it generally does always seem to be like it's a bottom half of the table team, maybe a smaller team at home. And maybe it's one of the first games of the weekend, and I think the home crowd are just trying to create that atmosphere where it's almost impossible for the away team to like play their football. And listen, I know players should be able to deal with that, but for one reason or another, it just always seems to go the way of the home side. There has to be some sort of psychology behind it, because we've seen way too many results where the home team will pick up the win. So I don't know. It is a weird one.
Yeah, we've got to get some kind of academic to do a study on this, I think, because it's just strange. It's strange.
Get Matoma to do it.
Yeah. Oh my God. He looks to be continuing his form, by the way. He looks incredible again. But yeah, I think that pretty much concludes things. Thanks for joining me, boys. Pleasure as always, the pod. And it's fun to watch Spurs again. So that's always a positive.
Amen, brother.
Thank you, Cosy.